Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Upzoned, where every week we take just one big story from the news that touches the Strong Towns conversation and we upzone it. We talk about it in depth. I'm Kia, and our usual pal Chuck is probably packing for an exciting European vacation right now. So I'm taking the opportunity to talk about a topic that I have a feeling I would never talk about with Chuck. It is Burning Man, specifically what Burning Man has to teach cities about the project of city building. There's a really great article from Governing on the topic. And before I tell you more, I want to go ahead and introduce my mystery co-host here. It is my colleague, Jacob Moses. He is from Denton, Texas. You probably know him as the very, very nice guy who answers the email almost anytime you contact Strong Towns over email or Facebook or what have you. Jacob, how are you doing today?
Hi, Kia. I'm doing good. Thank you. And thanks for having me on another episode of Upzoned. It was a blast last time and look forward to having another conversation today.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. If you all don't already listen to Jacob's podcast, It's The Little Things, it's one of my favorite listens every single week. It is so good. And he reaches way beyond our staff for his guests to find cool people doing small and honestly pretty big things to make their community stronger. So feel free to put this on pause and go check out an It's The Little Things. But if we've hooked you with the Burning Man premise, let me just tell you a little bit about the article we're going to be talking about today. It is called City of Dust. Isn't that an intriguing, mysterious name? And it's about how Burning Man, which for those of you who don't know, is an annual 9-day festival out in Black Rock City. I want to say Utah. Why am I like forgetting?
I think it was Nevada.
Mind blank there. Where people from all around the world get together. First, they build a city from scratch, and then eventually they burn it down. If you're listening to this and saying, like, Kia, I'm too old for this, Kia is still too old for this, too. I have never been to Burning Man. Jacob has never been to Burning Man, but both of us were really struck by this article because it has some really interesting things to say about the project of iteratively, incrementally building a city, even if that city only exists for about 9 days. And it actually doesn't have a whole lot to do with like Bacchanals in the Desert, where you take ayahuasca and hang out with a guy in a wolf costume, which is my sort of mental image of Burning Man. Jacob, why don't you tell me a little bit about your associations with Burning Man and what struck you about this article?
Yeah, similar to you, Kia, my impression of Burning Man was just this event where you roll up and maybe some more scantily clad clothing than you usually rock, kick it with your peers, and just be rowdy for a week. And it was really eye-opening to read this article from Governing of, actually, this Burning Man event is very sophisticated. It has lots of amenities. And for, I don't recall how long it runs, but for the period that everyone's there together, it functions as, you know, an actual city, an actual village. And going through this article, it was amazing just to see, you know, all the Strong Towns language that this author credited to the success of Burning Man, which I know we'll talk about more, but incrementalism, feedback loops, I mean, all this really great initiatives that have helped make Burning Man a success.
It's pretty incredible. I mean, I just want to read one quick paragraph from this article, which I usually wouldn't do, but I just was gobsmacked by this. The truth is Burning Man incorporates aspects of each element of Mad Max style free-for-all, counterculture experiment and capitalism, and kaleidoscopic neo-hippie celebration of art and self-expression. But it all happens against the backdrop of a painstakingly laid out city, a planned community that aspires to the highest ideals of urban design. There's a bike and pedestrian friendly street grid with broad avenues and smaller streets punctuated by public gathering spaces. There's a city core, a grand esplanade, distinct neighborhoods and even quieter suburbs. There are restaurants, bars, music venues, and educational facilities. Some of you are listening to this and are probably thinking, whoa, but no one's paying taxes for this, right? There isn't a department of health like going around and, you know, making sure that everyone's up to code. The project of building an intentional community for 9 days between August and September is not exactly the same thing as building a city that is going to last multiple lifetimes, multiple generations. But the thing that really excited me, particularly about Burning Man, was the idea that it is a intentional, non-spectator driven participatory environment. There's one rule that they talk about a lot at Burning Man that they mentioned in this article, which is that everyone has to participate in the creation of Burning Man. Everyone, no one's a spectator. Everyone's jumping in and doing some stuff. I'm curious if there are anything that was mentioned in this article, Jacob, that you think would be portable towards your city. Would you ever, for instance, like build a mutant bike ship with like a giant cat and roll it down the streets of Denton?
A mutant bike ship would definitely be a fan favorite among myself and my fellow Dentonites. What I found most appealing in this article, and I think it was just the first paragraph where this planner, I believe she was a planner, but she was observing this plaza that they had built. It wasn't really attracting many folk. So she humbled herself, observed how people are interacting with the plaza, and said, you know what, we're going to try something different next year to try to make this more of a place. And again, as Kia mentioned, of course, in many of our cities, we don't have the luxury of just starting over. If we want to build a billion-dollar town square, we realize, people aren't really vibing with this. Tear it down and try again. We don't have that luxury. But of course, it's interesting to see how we can observe how people are interacting with the environment that we built and tweak it to make it more of a place. And I think the article goes on to talk about tactical urbanism. You know, if we find a place where we want to have better activation, let's start off with maybe, you know, reviving an alleyway or creating a parklet. So it's cool to see how, you know, we can observe different things that we can do to make our neighborhood better, try them out. And of course, if we embrace this concept of incrementalism, incrementally add to it as we see people interact with it.
Yeah. You know, I bet you people listening to this are saying, wait, you're talking about incrementalism in the context of a 9-day city, right? And I think that's a good thing to underline. And one thing that this article, I think, really activates for me is this idea that incrementalism can happen by, it just means small. It doesn't necessarily mean slow. And small, by the way, is relative to what is large within the space that you're in. So, you know, Jacob, you mentioned the term tactical urbanism a number of times. What we mean when we say that is just like any like little intervention that you make without calling up the city and saying, hey, will you build this for me? You're putting a flower bed in the middle of your town square because you want people to stop and smell them and you don't necessarily ask permission. But it's a tactical, simple, usually low cost or free thing that you can do to make public space a little bit more usable and a little bit more yours. Burning Man is a great example of how you can create things that are like extraordinarily huge and extraordinarily impressive and look like they could stand for a long time on a temporary basis and see how they look. And then, you know, if Burning Man were a different kind of an event, maybe they would make all this stuff permanent and Black Rock City, Nevada would just be, you know, Burning Man USA that got a little bit different over time. However, the nature of their event, they burn it all down and start over. But it's this incredible sort of staging ground to show how incrementally, meaning by iteratively working in lots and lots and lots of different ways, we can create a space that serves lots of diverse people who are, you know, moving through the space in lots of diverse ways. And diverse meaning often wearing a robot costume or something like that, but also just occupying space in a pretty fundamentally unique way.
Yeah, that's a great point, Kia. And you mentioned before, you know, this line in the article, how no one is a spectator, everyone is a creator. And this is, you know, a piece of advice that every city and town across the neighborhood can adopt and immediately apply to their own place. I mean, it reminds me of our latest episode of It's the Little Things. We interviewed Regina Portillo out of Laredo, Texas. She's the executive director of this great organization called City Makery. And their origin story is fascinating, Kia. So it started off with the city of Laredo rewriting its comprehensive plan. It got a lot of great public engagement, a lot of residents who were sharing their great ideas. So the city asked themselves, you know, how can we capture these ideas? Of course, this may be a static document, but how can we use all these living ideas to contribute to our vision for Laredo? So City Maker was born, and what they do is partner with all of these citizens with all of these great ideas to better Laredo, and then partner them with a lot of these forward-thinking officials to make these ideas a reality. So when we think about Burning Man, you know, it's just this group of people with a lot of ideas, whether it's art installations, mutant-themed vehicles. People have ideas. And with this, you know, how Burning Man functions, you can immediately implement them. There's a way that we can do that in our cities and towns as well. You know, I think even before I joined Strong Towns, I kind of had this idea of if a citizen's going to have an idea, they just need to bootstrap it. You don't get government involved. And my thinking wasn't correct. So it's been really intriguing reading this Burning Man article, getting involved with Strong Towns, to say, you know what? We can complement these great ideas that our citizens have with systems and funding mechanisms for local government. So great to see kind of that association between crazy ideas at Burning Man and actually implementing ideas in our own neighborhoods.
When I read this article, I just kept thinking about how we could take the kind of tactical urbanism that we see already in our cities and just make it a little more creative, encourage people on a cultural level to treat their city like it's a festival that they paid some money to go to, that they feel a sense of ownership over their space. I think that's really the biggest challenge of taking the lessons from Burning Man and bringing them into our cities, is that we signal through a lot of our urban design, through a lot of our policy, through our culture at large, that you are not, you know, attendees of like the wondrous festival you call Denton, Texas, in your case, or St. Louis, Missouri, in my case, that you are a consumer of city products and like you need to take what you're given. And I've always been inspired by people who reject that narrative about their city and are excited to create intentional space within their places, whether that's as simple as, I read an article the other day about a guy who built some very, very basic plywood benches and put them at bus stops. He painted on the side, like property of his name, or like provided by his name rather, which is just, was one of those things that you're just, you look at it and you kind of chuckle because you're like, how easy was that to just put down a bench there? And, you know, if it gets stolen, it's maybe $7 worth of plywood at Home Depot. You make another one. But the way that, you know, if I wanted to request a bench to be put at my bus stop through the city, it would be this arduous process that at every turn would make it clear that, like, there are regulations in place that are designed to say, not you. You are not person who should be doing this. And there are good reasons for a lot of regulations. I guess this guy could have built a terrible bench that broke under somebody's weight and, you know, like injured them in a very slapstick comedy kind of a way. I am more excited by the creative possibilities of getting people looking at their city like it's theirs than I am worried about the risks of that, you know? Because, I mean, when you look at Burning Man, which, by the way, a lot of fire at Burning Man, the injury rate is pretty low. You know, it's a safe, happy, exciting place for a lot of people, and it's become a beloved event.
Kia, I'd love to hear from you. You know, how do we find this balance between, you know, citizen-led tactical urbanism interventions, whether it's, you know, a parklet on a busy block or this DIY bus stop, and encouraging our elected officials to take a similar approach to building great places? Where do we think we find that balance between, of course, encouraging elected officials to adopt a similar approach, but also as engaged citizens, like wanting to do our part to demonstrate our ideas?
I think that's a great question. I want to be clear that, like, I am not an anarchist. I've known some anarchists in my life. We had someone who identified as an anarchist working for Strong Towns. Shout out to Max. You know, wherever you are, Max, we miss you for a long time. And I think that there's a lot to be said about models of government that embrace chaos and like people power. I don't go all the way on that train, but I do think that like I am uniquely inspired by the kind of elected officials who see their role as is to make space for people to make amazing places. So the example that springs to mind, I wrote an article for Shonetowns a long time ago about the Compton corridor spheres. Actually, people call them the Compton balls, but it sounds very crass, so I won't. It was a traffic calming intervention on, you know, basically three blocks away from my house. It was fantastic. And from my point of view, because it really slowed down cars, it was just these giant concrete spheres that had been placed on all four corners and made it so you had to be kind of careful moving around the corner. And no surprise, sometimes cars hit them. Much better that they hit those balls than that they hit people, but I digress. But I had a really interesting conversation with my alderwoman, Christine Ingracia, who rocks, who I love. And she was like, her response to this was to throw a party for the balls. We threw, you know, the Compton ball, basically. And it was an invitation for people to come out. And like, she actually closed down the street around the balls, you know, like, if you didn't like traffic calming before, you probably won't like it now. But actually, to get people out on foot exploring this space, she let kids draw on one of the balls with chalk. Another one, people got to paint them. We had a local bike advocacy out there talking about like all the ways that you could get around in this neighborhood and how this corridor was connected to other bike corridors throughout the city. And it was this space for basically to say, this is your space, no matter who you are. And like, cars aren't going to drive through here today, but they can tomorrow. And how can we make this a neighborhood corner? And it was so inexpensive. There were like a few bags of chips were probably like the highest. And like, you know, chalk was about like the most expensive thing that was bought that day. But it was a really exciting little humble neighborhood event. And it was led by a local official. And like, I don't consider that the kind of like top-down government. You know, I consider that the kind of like leadership that we need in our places.
Yeah, there's so many excellent examples, and that one's particularly inspiring, Kia. And I think about another past this Little Things episode, we had Nick Kittle, who kind of calls himself a government innovator. And what he does is consult local governments to pursue more pilot projects. So perhaps if you're an elected official, the status quo is to, you know, reserve your public engagement for the scheduled sessions in the council chambers and then pursue your master plan projects. What Nick Kittle encourages is that, hey, let's pursue maybe a dozen small pilot projects and have a group consensus that maybe 2, 4, 5, 6 of these aren't going to work out, but then to buy into the ones that are working well. So again, it's just this philosophy of let's test things out, not only as citizens, but as local government officials as well. Let's see what works. We understand some things aren't going to work out, but let's pursue the ones that do. I think it's just a really great message that has worked out at Burning Man and then likely can work in our own communities as well.
I want to ask one more question, which is just kind of to tie it back to our mission. The one thing the governing article doesn't really talk about, you know, for I think good reasons, is there something that our cities can learn about how to get financially stronger from a Burning Man or an intentional community example? I have some thoughts on this, but, you know, Jacob, if you do, feel free to take it away. I just would love to really connect for our audience why it's important that incremental, iterative, creative placemaking actually isn't just like a thing that makes, you know, life more livable, streets safer, but also can make our cities more financially resilient too.
Sure. I'll use a real life example of something that's happening here in Denton. So in our downtown, we have Industrial Street. It's lined with a lot of tremendous restaurants and bars. A great place where we'd want to consider creating a gathering place where you don't have to, you know, buy a margarita or a taco or whatever. So we designated a space called Industrial Street Park. And the city went through months and months of planning, eventually picked this park design that I think would cost about $500,000. Right now, it's just a blank space with grass on it. Do we really need, and do we have the confidence to move forward with this $500,000 design and not really know if it's going to work? I mean, the first paragraph in this governing article, the young lady was discussing the plaza. Hey, this plaza isn't really attracting people as we hoped it would. Let's try something new next year. when we're talking about a $500,000 park design, we don't have that luxury. So I think in terms of financial solvency, it makes sense with as complex of a system as creating good public spaces. Let's start with what we know. You know, let's create places where people can sit. Let's provide some shade. Let's maybe make tables that people can move and arrange however they'd like. And then from there, see how people are interacting with the space and add to it as needed. So in the end, like we see with Burning Man, you know, I imagine that very first festival, it was probably chaotic. Like you didn't have the amenities and these really great designs as you have today. And that's because, you know, they started off with what they thought would work well with the budget that they had. And as people engage with it, added more to it to create what makes Burning Man so special today. So in terms of financial solvency, let's start with, you know, maybe a couple $100 to create what we hope this space can be. Observe how people interact with it. And then once we have some more, you know, evidence-based outcomes, we can put more funds towards what we hope this project can be.
And then you burn it all down. No, you don't have to. You can. Well, thank you, Jacob. That was awesome. And that was such a great answer. I'm so glad we got to do this today. But I do have one more question for you because it is time for the down zone. I want to hear a little bit about what you have been reading, watching, listening to, enjoying on your media hit list. Or, you know, we've expanded the down zone a little bit probably since the last time you were on. I asked John Reuter this question and he was like, I've been enjoying ice cream. He was fancy ice cream brand.
Good for John.
He's enjoyed. And I was like, yeah, John, like you enjoy, it's summer, you indulge. But I would love to hear what you've been enjoying lately.
I've been reading, I think it's the sixth book of Angie McCall Smith's 44 Scotland Street series, The Unbearable Lightness of Scones. I've been really enjoying that book. And then I've been listening from the other room, Bachelor's Paradise Island. That is a favorite in the Moses family household. So I'm not directly engaging with it. But I have a pretty good idea what's going down from the other room.
Wow. I have to admit that I was not into The Bachelor until very recently. And then I happened to watch like a couple episodes from the Colton season, and I was hypnotized. So I watched all of The Bachelorette, and I would love to not spoil for our audience. But here, what you think about Jed? We got to talk about Jed. So that's my very, very far down zone. I would love to talk about something maybe a little bit more high flown today. I've been listening to a podcast series that I think is so good. It's actually a little mini series embedded in the Radiolab podcast, and it's called G. And G is specifically about IQ tests and how we designate genius and the opposite of genius in human society. And it's so interesting, sometimes really disturbing and upsetting, because the IQ test, of course, if you've read about this before, you know it has some really troubling racist implications. It has some really troubling implications for people of different abilities and different, you know, levels of neurodiversity and things like that. But it also sort of gets at this really exciting and like kind of wonderful human question about like, how do we know who is smart in our society, not just right, but brilliant. And that question is something that is fascinating to me, and I'm loving the series they're putting out. So my submission is G from Radiolab. I'll give us a link in the comments. All right. That is what I've got for you today. Thank you so much for listening to Upzoned. If you want to support the show, you can always do that by giving us a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever you like, or you can support the movement at strongtowns.org/membership. Join us and we can build stronger places than we've ever built before. Cool. Sounds like a plan. All right. Thanks so much, and keep doing what you can to build a strong town.